Well, hi, everybody, and welcome to our final in our series. Again, thank you for your comments and sending in questions. I want to open it for just a moment. Any questions or clarifications about anything we've talked about or that you want to be sure we talk about in our remaining seminar? Anything that you'd like to discuss more directly? Open mic time. Anyone? Well, I want to respond to a couple of questions and comments that you've mentioned in responses to my two questions, that this series focuses on writing a first nonfiction book. But even if you're not doing that, you're not in the wrong place. These principles and this system of addressing the art, the craft, the science, and the business of writing your first book is applicable to your fundamental engagement in writing, whatever you decide to write about and whatever that is. This may be a blog series. It may be a podcast series. The same kind of principles of looking at systematically establishing and structuring what you're going to be offering, how you're going to present it, I think may be applicable. Now, that's also why this seminar series is the beginning of the new calendar year, which forms a framework of the remaining, I think, six or seven seminar series that I'll do throughout 2025, because each builds on the other, and each is really about you writing your own story and application in various areas, including the next series on a new wellness story, but always with application to professional coaching. So the point of view is of any writing or any speaking is your reader or your listener. And the point of view of each session and engagement in coaching, your client. This experience of empathically engaging with your reader parallels the empathic resonance and understanding with your client and co-creating a new story together. So I hope that addresses some of the questions and clarifications about that. Let me pause for a minute. Any other thoughts, questions, things you'd like to add to the hopper to be sure that we discuss in our final series, in our final seminar? Well, I'll put us on lecture mode, so you don't have to worry about the background noise. Okay, we've talked about the art, the craft, and the science of writing your first book. We're going to talk about the business aspects of writing. You probably saw the quote at the beginning of the outline. Someone asked Ira Gershwin, the great American songwriter, which comes first, the words or the music? And he quickly responded, the contract. So that will set the tone for what we're going to be talking about. A brief recap as we discuss selling your story, the business of writing. Writing is like selling. It needs to solve a problem or meet a need or multiple problems and needs. Do your groundwork. Foster connections and affiliations. Do research. Develop marketing strategies. Gather information. This may be online research with Google alerts. I have a couple of dozen that I get an alert if I've elected each day. Whatever happens in the world literature, I get an alert that gives me a title, an abstract, and a link if it interests me. So that's one way to keep up with what's happening in various kinds of literature. Critique groups, classes, conferences, networks for nonfiction books. Publishers buy based on a book proposal in the first chapter. You don't have to have pardon me, you don't have to have the entire book completed. So here are three very oversimplified secrets of writing success. Choose what you want to write and learn about. Believe it will be yours, and then take positive action toward that goal every day. Pick a spot, do that, then do what's next. So as a coach, consultant, business person, you already know how to do the first thing that writers find most difficult, to think about the sale. You do that with professional coaching, not framed as a sale, but that you're operating based on a fee for your professional services. The essence of publishing is that it's a business with a bottom line, with risk, with a marketplace, with a business goal. You create and market a product, your knowledge, your writing. A writer may mistakenly put all energy into crafting a message rather than thinking like a business person, but both are necessary. So let's revisit three questions. One, how do you write a book? Well, the same way you began seeing yellow Jeeps after you visualized one. Once you begin to think about writing a book, you start to see things in different ways. You hear vignettes, ideas crystallize. You develop an awareness of what you say and how you say it. You've cued your radar. It makes you a better listener, makes you a better speaker, makes you a better reader. Remember, nobody ever sits down to write a book. You sit down to write a few sentences or a page. Two, why do you want to write? To sell the book, to develop a second career, to further your existing career, to learn something, for the joy of writing, to make a difference, or others, or a combination. Three, for whom do you write? And remember that the first authentic answer is yourself. Yet you have to respect the marketplace. So be attuned to needs. Be aware of providing answers and the questions that people ask that they need answered. Make your approaches to answers accessible. You attune to existing needs as well as remain true to your own story. Your gift to readers is who you are. So I want to look with you now at some options for getting your book published. And there are 8 or 9 possibilities. And this is not an all or nothing, but let's look at each of these. One is simply to self-publish. You can form your own publishing company. You can self-publish in any format. You can do an e-book. If you decide one of the easier ways to do an e-book is BookBaby, the imprint of Amazon. If you publish a book that groups or companies can use, you can sell multiples or thousands of those books. You control the printing. If you sell to a corporation that wants a hard copy of 10,000 books for its people, you can easily include a letter from the CEO as the first page of the book. So here are some considerations and steps to constructing your book if you self-publish. And these price figures that I'll give are sort of estimates, but they're kind of ballpark. They're based on maybe 250-word typewritten double-spaced pages. One is editing. After completing your manuscript, you will most likely need to get it edited by a professional editor. And that can be, $2,000 to $3,000. Email me when you get to this step if you choose this option, and I'll give you a recommendation to the head of an editing consortium that I've used. And the person in charge matches his stable of editors in various places in the country to the kind of writing and what you want to do with that writing. If you want just line editing, if you want conceptual help, if you want to create a bridge to an agent for that, he'll match your work to an editor knowledgeable in that area and for a really reasonable fee. Formatting. Now, if you self-publish, you'll need to get it formatted. In other words, to make it look like, instead of a Word document, you'll need to make it look like a book. And that's something that you can use a formatter who specializes in this. And this is somewhere around $400 to $600 to $700 to format it to a book so that you simply then engage the publisher to make an e-book version or a print version or both. If you do it and you really want to make it look professional, you'll also want to do indexing. That's about $300 or $400. Somebody who can do the indexing after you've completed the manuscript, because you'll want the page references. The graphic design, this is something important for the cover, the back, and the spine. And a graphics firm can do it. I have a person who's done the graphics for the curriculum that I've offered for the NeuroMentor Institute of Peak Performance. She's just completed the work on the modules for the curriculum of the new offering that I'll drop in the spring about, you know, neuroscience for mentor coaches. And it looks, if you want to see that work, look at www.neuromentorinstitute.com/mentorcoach. It's in the signature line at the bottom of my emails. If you want to have it printed, you can pay for it being printed, and that'll be $2 or $3 a book. If you want to warehouse and distribute it, now this is, I don't want to inundate you with things, but these are all things to think about, because if, unless you want to operate out of your garage, you will want somebody, if they order a book, to ship it to them. So the printer can be connected to the distribution warehouse, and they'll do single sales online, queued from your website, for example. So that may sound complex because there are a number of moving parts, but it's something that will get simplified as you look at making it a stepwise process. Now, a subsidy publisher is you pay for the major part of publishing cost. The benefit is that you have a publishing house that does all the work that I just described, except the editing. And you do the writing and then the editing. So with a subsidy publisher, unless you negotiate hard, you won't have any influences on the choices, including the cover. But here's a way to go if you do that, a print on demand. So think about, and I've had a number of people who have been very pleased with the print on demand. And the leading publishers in this area are Author House, Morgan James, and Ex Libris. I used Ex Libris for the only time that I did a print on demand, back when I did a memoir on parenting, because I didn't want anybody to mess with that man. I didn't want anybody to insert a comma, because it was what I wanted to do. It was what I did for myself at the time, and later if my kids happened to read it. And I selected the cover art, and it was everything that I wanted it to be. So that's something that if you want to do a print-on-demand, it's something that print-on-demand will, the publisher will take it and do all of the work, and you'll end up with a book. Now, they set the cover price, and it's usually high. So, like, if the cover price is $25, you get to purchase it for maybe $15. so you can resell it. Or they may require you to invest a certain amount or buy a certain amount to agree to publish your book. And that varies with the publisher. But the benefit is it gets your book out there. You have a book in a very few months, and you get to actively participate in everything, including the cover choice. Now, here's another way to do this, and this is probably more so for non-traditional books like curriculum. Any of you who've trained at CTA, the accelerator, when it was in hard copy, was done by the same fulfillment house that I use that have done binders and curriculum for some of the specialty certification training that I do. More and more, this is a digital version instead of a fulfillment house. But a fulfillment house can simply, whenever someone purchases a copy, let's say of a curriculum for a training course, it cues the trigger, the fulfillment house to send that person a hard copy of your book. So that makes it really easy, and you wrap in the cost plus the profit that you want to make on the curriculum to the training course. So, and it comes in, if you choose, a three-ring binder, or it can be bound. Those are just some possibilities. Now, let's look at a traditional publishing house by way of a literary agent. For nonfiction books, you submit a book proposal and a first chapter to an agent. Now, it's almost as hard to find an agent as it is a publisher, but there's a book that you can purchase called Literary Agents of North America, and it has all of the literary agents in North America listed by genre, category, what they're interested in, what they've been successful at, and it's worth a purchase and some research if you want to go this way. So for nonfiction books, you submit a proposal. There likely will be an advance, a royalty from somewhere around 10 to 15%, whatever the agent negotiates. The agent usually gets 15% of all royalties. The advance can range anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 for beginning authors and go up from there. It's an advance on royalty, meaning your first royalty payments would be taken out of that advance before you then get payment. Another way of publishing is partnering with a foundation or a company. For this option, a foundation or a company may support your writing and may even want to be participant in publishing the book to further their cause. Usually, the author has a special tie with the organization, may even donate a portion of the proceeds to that group. This is the only of the variations of publishing that I haven't done yet. I know some people who've done that and been very pleased with it. Another, an ebook. This can set up an automatic purchase from your website as well. So you do an ebook, and you can do all of the formatting and the automatic process like with an ebook publisher like Amazon with BookBaby, or you can create it yourself and sell it from your website. There are a lot of variations here, but you have an active hand in this process, and you'll be doing the editing, probably the graphics, and that sort of thing. So those are just some things some possibilities to think about. For any book you publish, consider having an ebook option at least that you control. Now, a traditional publisher won't allow you to do this, but every other form of publishing, you probably want to have an ebook option so that you're having total determination over the sale of that book. It means you're responsible too, but here is a compelling reason. The cost per sale per ebook is pretty good. It's zero once you set it up. And this is a great option for international publishers because shipping costs are so high outside the U.S., even to Canada. So you'll see a book that's only an ebook, perhaps as the only offering because it's instantly internationally available. You'll see one at my website in the library. The top tab is library. You'll see a number of different things. One of the a book that has never been anything other than an ebook, Outsmart Your Brain, an instruction manual. You can click on that and purchase it directly from the website. Now, some copyright considerations. For any form, for any venue of publishing, article to book, always keep the copyright on any work you produce. Never sign it over to anyone else under any circumstances. It's your intellectual property. Be sure if an organization uses material from you, as in a training program, be sure you have copyright stamped, included on that material. And if you need an agreement with the organization, that you maintain copyright. Now, registration is not required. You don't have to spend that $200 or $300 to register with the U.S. trademark and copyright government group. It isn't required, but there may be some advantages to do it. Here are a couple of the most prominent advantages. Registration establishes a public record of the copyright claim. And before an infringement suit can be filed in court, registration is necessary for works of U.S. origin. So let's look at elaborating a little bit. Why self-publish? Well, self-publishing can have at least five benefits. One, control. With a traditional publishing house, you sign an exclusive agreement that prevents you from having any input about most of the decisions about your book, including the cover and the release date. If your book doesn't sell quickly, and if the publisher lets it go out of print, there's a waiting period before you can be allowed to seek another publisher, and a time period before you can publish another book. So read that contract clearly. Second advantage, money. A contract with a book publisher does not necessarily give you a guarantee for anything other than the advance on your royalty. It will not guarantee that you get it onto bookstore shelves, how long it'll stay on the shelves, if it actually makes it. If you're a new author, your publisher will allocate little to no marketing dollars to promote your book. If it does well, it will be largely by your own hand, and your reward will be a tiny fraction of the book's total profits. 3, waiting and rejection. Realistically, first-time authors have difficulty breaking into a blue-chip publishing house. It's tough. Many nonfiction book projects are time-sensitive, and you may not want to wait 18 to 24 months for your book to be published. Autonomy. Self-published authors usually have confidence and have developed a following by giving talks and seminars. As an expert in your area, you may not need a publisher's approval. You may also happen to like being in the driver's seat of your book project. So here's the first question an agent will ask you if you propose sending a book proposal and a manuscript or a first chapter. The first question will be, what's your platform? Meaning, how many followers do you have who are likely to buy your book? The reason that's the literary agent's first question is, That's the publisher's first question of that literary agent. What's the platform? How many people will likely buy your book? And this has to be impressive. You're not Dr. Phil. None of us are for that kind of following. So we have to generate ways of marketing, creating contacts, creating the platform, the list of people who are likely to buy the book. Fifth, the power of belief. You most probably believe deeply that others will benefit from reading what you have to say, or you wouldn't be listening to this right now, or wanting to get your message into a more permanent form. I'll bet that's an unshakable conviction. I'll also bet that a deep belief motivates what you do as well as what you write, a strong sense of purpose. That's why you need to write a book, and that's why you need to sell books. You may want to consider self-publishing if any of these factors that we just discussed fit. Now, in recent time, there is no longer a stigma attached to self-publishing. A couple of decades and more ago, it was a death knell for any serious author to self-publish a first book. The producers were called vanity presses. Now it's accepted, even sometimes necessary. I have heard major literary agents recommend it to certain authors to test the market. And my first venture, my only venture, venture into non-traditional publishing at the time meant other than a professional or a trade publishing house. And that was, as I mentioned, making memories. And it was essentially my therapy and my letting go of my kids, you know, reflections from the heart of a father and the mind of a psychoanalyst. I began writing it a year and a half before my son, my oldest, left for college. Completed it a year after my youngest, my daughter, left for college. So it was about a 3-year period that I was doing this. It was my way of mourning, of saying goodbye to parenting, the most important thing I had ever done, in my view. I needed to do it to bring closure to an entire era of my life without burdening them. I was mourning their childhood as well as the kid I could be again with them. And I also wanted them to know someday what it was like being their parent from my perspective. And I didn't want an editor, as I mentioned, to touch a comma of it. So, and even the cover, where I took a picture of my own abstract sculpture of a dad holding two kids, and that was the cover. So, and now it happened that the book was successful because I did an interview with a newspaper that was picked up and syndicated. And for a time, it was number one on Amazon. That was just luck. But here's the principle. No one cares more about your book than you do. So plan one of the 48 Laws of Power, probably the best business book I've ever read. Law, I think, number 29, says plan all the way to the end. So here are some thoughts about titles that tell and sell. 3 to 5 words capture the essence of the book's promise. We've gone over this, but this is a review and an overview. So your question, does the title sell? It's an answer, not a question, a solution, not a problem. Is the title positive and empowering? Is the title a memorable image or metaphor or symbol that instantly can capture the essence of a book, the hook? Is the title a prescription for the cure that the book will provide, if that's the purpose of the book? Does the title make a promise the book will fulfill? Does it offer your unique position, your good news? Does the title speak to one of the 5 great marketing motivators? Fear, exclusivity, guilt, greed, or the need for approval? Now, if you can find a positive way, for example, greed has a bad reputation, but its definition is a rapacious desire for more. That is a passion, such as to tell and sell your story. Does the title appeal to the needs and values of the potential readers? Does the subtitle clearly spell out the benefits of reading the book? So here's an exercise I would suggest. Schedule an appointment with yourself. Brainstorm a title for your book. Don't try to focus on one direction. Don't censure. Don't edit. Free associate. Brainstorm. Stream of consciousness. Allow a free flow of ideas and write them all down. Put down anything and everything that comes to you. Come up with 30 potential titles that you write down. Another exercise, ideally a different time. Still an appointment with yourself. Get in state. Do the same with your subtitle. Same free flow. Not at the time you're brainstorming your title. Carve out a separate time for this exercise. Brainstorm 30 possible subtitles. Then, come back to your brainstormed titles first and select your favorites. Put those away for at least 24 hours again, then come back to them a third time. And then do that for your subtitles, and then see how they fit together. See what rings true and seems engaging. And finally, select one or two of each and be sure they go together. Another exercise, another time. Write 5 to 6 bullet points of benefits readers will get by reading your work. Make them brief, clear, specific, and simple, the 4 principles of good writing and good speaking. So here's one kind of overview, a kind of publishing roadmap for nonfiction. It's roughly in the order of occurrence, but never is anything as clear and as specific and organized as for the purposes of discussion. That's not the way our minds work. So think about your idea and write it down. Do your homework. Choose how you're going to write. Are you going to type? Will you dictate? Will you write your material by longhand? Research the topic and the competition. And this is in your outline. Develop a title and a subtitle. Find similar books. Ones that compete. Ones that complement. Ones that you can see what's out there and know and use as a model. Not to copy, but to inform. Design a working cover. Set up various binders or folders to hold your material and at least begin with different stacks that you can later call chapters. Write out a basic structure for your book. Chapter titles, concepts, chronology. Organize your ideas into chapters. And ultimately generate a complete book proposal, even if you're self-publishing. This is the basic architecture of your book. And then create a draft, a first draft, of your first chapter. Then you may want to edit, review the first draft, to go to a second draft. Read your second draft aloud, ultimately, as another step of editing. So here are just some miscellaneous points, not in any specific order. 2 crucial elements are execution and marketing. So always be thinking about your intended audience. Who are you writing for? How well do you know them? How do you resonate with their challenges, their issues? How do you communicate to them based on their needs, their perspectives? If you're blocked, skip past it and move to the next thing. You don't get to go shopping on Amazon if you you have what you call a writer's block. If you're blocked in writing, get somebody else in the room and tell them what you're trying to say that you're blocked on. Even have a recorder. You may not remember, or you may want to reflect back. Perhaps record even better video yourself pitching your idea. Then you may also want another person to look at it with you and critique that. Communicate your message throughout when you're writing. Communicate the value to the reader when you're selling. Think about the reader, their perspective, who you're writing for. So I want to elaborate just a little bit about platform and building a platform. So if you're working on a book project, what do you do first? Write your book, set up a website or a blog, start publishing something, an e-zine, a blog. Does it matter? Well, it does matter. And what you decide depends on your destination. So let's think about it in that way for a minute. For a major book deal, to publish with a big publisher, you probably would do things differently from what you would do to fill a coaching practice or to establish yourself as a professional speaker. Some overlap, though. Your platform, your presence in the marketplace is how many people know you, as well as why people know you. Your brand is tied to your audience. For major publicity and book deals, existing platform is very crucial. To sell your book, as well as to build business and expand your audience, growing your platform is essential. So again, first question an agent asks the author, what's your platform? Who knows you? How many people do you know who will buy your book? So considerations to build your platform. Newsletter, blog, podcast, affiliate partnerships, writing articles for publication, speaking, workshops, seminars, publications to trade journals, presentations to conferences, trade shows, organizations, affiliate contacts and partnerships. Media exposure, radio, TV, podcasts, teleseminars. Think about developing your social and business media presence and developing a following there. And it's one of the first things you might have thought about with the socials or with the business media to announce the opening of your practice for professional coaching and have someone have a link like to a Calendly where they can click and schedule a brief consultation with you or a complimentary brief coaching session to get an idea of what it would be like to work together. Here, you may want to have a link for somebody to download an article or something that you've published that by doing that, you have their email. In the old days, it was a newsletter with offering a white paper or two when they left their email for you, giving you permission to send further communication to them. But there are variations of that now, and the social and business media can really expedite that. Another thing to build your platform is this is simply to enhance your coaching practice as well. Brand and niche are important. Your brand is your promise. What's your promise? What's the good news of your book? The aha that you hope people will get. Make sure you have a way to connect with potential clients and readers from your blog, your website, articles, including those that you may offer as downloads. Help distribute your message and presence. You can be a guest on someone else's blog or someone else's podcast. My suggestion, have an agreement that you'll have at least an outline of what you're going to be talking about, or some kind of offering that will be a brief offering that's a benefit to the listener or the reader, that will also happen to have your contact information and a way to get in contact with you for any kind of free ebook or anything that you offer, or just simply your blog series. And of course, have at the top of your blog a way for someone to leave an email giving you permission for further communication. Another is to become a professional speaker. The easiest way to become a professional speaker is to have a book. Even with a book, though, you'll need to become proficient at public speaking. I'd suggest beginning with Toastmasters. Evolve to workshops. What I did with Toastmasters when I made a transition into mentor coaching is to use the first three talks at Toastmasters. They're 3 to 5 minutes. And to develop those into the first three became my first keynote. So I had feedback and various kinds of practice doing these, combine them, which I had in mind in the beginning, into a keynote. So I was ready to go after the first 4 weeks of Toastmasters. And you get great, benevolent critiques. You learn more by giving critiques. I think it's something that's a real, real benefit for coaches. Another is to consider various media, the magazines, other media, TV included. Your priority may be simply to stand out in your area of expertise. A well-crafted niche and a branded website can be a priority here. Here's something that I think still applies. If you do a blog series or any kind of offerings, whether it's video on Instagram, a blog series, various kinds of offerings, even on LinkedIn, have a plan, have an editorial calendar, a brand, and develop that, and have a way that people can sign on, build your platform. So common to all of this is an authentic brand and a niche. So design anything you do, like the blog series, so that you're developing your expertise, you're writing about what you most want to learn, and you're accumulating both information that can be repurposed as well as a following. White papers are a way to do that, and that can be something you add to the benefit of a blog, of a podcast or a presentation, to have a white paper, a brief white paper on on a topic or related topic to what you're talking about, that will have your information and contact information so somebody can get in touch with you. So just to review, basically, some things you can do to promote your book. As soon as you have a title that you've settled on, buy a domain name that is that title. That secures that domain name. It also is a way to check immediately if there's something out there that already has used the title or even has trademarked the title you want to use. It's a very cheap way to do a trademark check, is to go, for example, to GoDaddy, enter the domain name that you want, your book title, .com, and they'll tell you if it's taken. If it's not, nail it, because it's cheap insurance. For $16, you can secure that for a couple of years, and by then you'll know if you're going to use it. You know, I have, 25 or 30 different domain names, and I've reduced that significantly because I may not. I only use a portion of those. And if I don't use it and see that I'm not going to use it, you know, I let it go. But also, it secures it, and it's there for when or if I want to use it. So put together a marketing plan for your book. That's going to be part of the book proposal. When you do a book proposal, you have developed a marketing plan as well as a blueprint for your book. And that marketing plan can be very useful to you to think in those ways, whether it's a book, your coaching practice, or some combination. And it will help you think like an author. It will help you think like a business person. You're a professional, but you're still in business. So this is something to think about and look at developing in your own way, in a way not that you're comfortable with, because that can be a limiting assumption to decide you need to be comfortable or confident before you start or in order to do it. That's not the way it works. We do it, then we get comfortable. Then we get confident. So you can begin to think about the book all the way to the end, and then as you're publishing, get to work on your next book. Sometimes the best way to sell your first book is by promoting your second book. So here are some things just to think about as an overview. This is a bird's eye view. Authors who still, let me say that differently. Authors who get published still need to do a lot of marketing. Books with a special interest niche audience, which tend to have even flat, steady sales, are ideal for print on demand. You can get it out there very quickly. It can be there. It's there. You can always revise it down the pike. Be sure your copyright is on that. If you're happy with a small but steady sales, you may want to get started, jump started with doing a print on demand. That may also interest a traditional publisher. And if you want to keep an older book in print, then print on demand is a good option because it doesn't go out of print. Now, if on the other hand you want to make a business of your book itself, if you want to make as much money as you can on the book, self-publishing may be the right choice for you to do all of that yourself. Line up a publisher who will do all of that, who will print however many copies you decide, and maybe distribute it themselves or send it to you. Depends on what you want to do. The upfront fee is bigger, but at the end of the day, you've made a lot more money with finding a publisher who will do minimum maybe 500 paperback copies. Now, if you have a story to tell and execute it well, your story deserves to find a market. Making a success of any self-published book does take time. It does take some money. A website, maybe paid keyword marketing, marketing to other websites that have something to do with the subject, getting booked on podcasts or various media, arranging book signings, that may all be in your future. You become your own promoter and distributor. And remember this, unless you work hard for your book, you're going to be Amazon.com number 2,400,023. Marketing figured prominently. Here's an example. Marketing figured prominently in the success of L. Trevor Grant's book on New York City's foster care system. He was rejected by basically every publisher in town. And Dr. Grant, a former social worker with child welfare agencies, decided to publish the book himself. He managed to get the book seen by nearly everyone who had something to do with child welfare or was studying that in college. Someone saw the book and called a talk show, popular at the time. You got to have this guy on your show. And Grant's life has never been the same since. His book is used as a teaching tool in schools of social work. Now, here's another story that you'll probably recognize. Jack Canfield said he sent a copy of his new book at the time to the jurors on the O.J. Simpson trial. Whenever the TV cameras panned the jurors during break and recess, most of them were reading his book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. Sales skyrocketed. Now, most people who buy books will know something about the subject of the book. A much smaller percentage will know the author, and nobody knows anything about the publisher. That's not what people look for unless you're a writer. Readers don't care who publishes the book. It's the readers that we write for. So to publicize your book, you have to capture people's attention in a world filled with media noise. Remember your silver bullet. The clear, sharply focused description of your book that explains what it's about, why it's special, and the specific benefits it will provide to the reader. So, I want to add one aspect of the business of writing. Now, here's my preface so I can say what I want to say to you and immediately deny that I said it. But here in it, this is being recorded. In all matters relating to your tax return, be certain to consult a qualified professional. Okay, that's the official position. Now, let's talk. Many of you know about itemized deductions already. You can deduct expenses related to the business of your writing. And think about the things that you buy that relate to writing. Supplies, equipment, books, subscriptions, expenses related to research, marketing expenses, including advertising, promotion, business-related meals, and travel. Why do you think you see so many novels set in Rome or Paris or Monte Carlo instead of downtown Newark? The key to each of these deductions, keep adequate records. Document the business purpose. If you don't already have one for a related business like coaching, consider opening a separate bank account, a business checking account, and take out a separate credit card for business expenses. This may be incorporated into your coaching business. A separate business name would probably help, but it's not necessary. Now, as you might imagine, for some time, I have rarely committed a non-deductible act. So, just something to think about. Here's a final thought, a secret, and a Zen story for authors. The final thought. Once you start writing, you'll never look at a piece of writing the same way again. Once you begin capturing your thoughts and your musings, you will feel some kind of magnetic pull to continue. When you find your personal style for capturing thoughts, images, and feelings, whether it's writing on a yellow pad, seeing your words materialize on a computer screen, or holding a dictation device to speak to an imagined audience, it will have its own appeal, develop a life of its own. Think of experiences that have been pivotal for you in opening new awarenesses. After my first cross-country bike trip with a buddy, I've never since looked at inclines and terrains in the same way without immense appreciation. As a photographer, I see light and framing in a different way. After my first watercolor class, I've never seen an aspen tree since on my yearly skiing trips without thinking of that particular wrist motion to get that downward branch etching on the trunk. Something that God knew in her infinite wisdom since the beginning of time. Your book will take on a life of its own. I hope our time together to consider some notions about the art, craft, science, and the business of writing have been helpful. I hope it's been perturbating as well as affirming. And I hope in a small way to inform and guide you to make a difference for yourself and others with your present and future books. Here's the secret. One book is like one potato chip. And here's the Zen story for authors. An oak tree is brought to creation by two simultaneous forces. One is the acorn from which it begins, the seed holding all the promise and potential for the full mature tree. The other force is the future tree itself, which desires so powerfully to exist that it pulls the seed, the acorn, into being. It draws forth from the germ and guides the evolution from nothingness to maturity. In this respect, it's the oak tree that creates the acorn from which it's born. Your book desires creation. You are already in a unique relationship with it. Listen carefully. Nurture it. Prune it. Let it go and be born. And here's a final challenge. What if right now is a turning point for you? The time your grandchildren will tell stories about years from now. The time you awakened your deep passion and acted on it. The time you did what you were always meant to do. Or, this moment of truth may be a brief awakening silenced by the sensible obstacles you're familiar with constructing. In that case, your grandchildren will have to be content telling stories of favorite sports teams or what great cookies you used to make. It will all depend on how brave you'll be. We're in discussion mode. We have just a moment or two. Thoughts, questions, things you'd like to add or ask or reflect on about what you're taking away, the most important thing you're taking away from our time together. I'm very interested. Anyone dare offer? For those of you who are listening to the recording, and haven't joined live for our last time, write down the most important thing that you're taking away from this series. Writing it down completes the circuitry in your brain. It makes it more memorable, more retrievable. Here's a brief study. University of Waterloo did a study in which two large, as matched as possible, groups of people read the same passage from a book. Half read it out loud, half read it silently. They all did the same test. The ones who read it out loud did 40% better on the test. Put it in an output channel. Write down the most important thing you're taking away, and we've been talking about writing down what you want to do and intend to do for various aspects of your book and capturing all that, putting it in various output channels, specifically the ones that work best for you. I'll be eager to hear what you're up to. If you have any questions or any follow-up, please let me know. Fire an email, and I'll be happy to respond. Let me know how this settles and marinates, and if it's been helpful to you. I'm really eager to hear. And if I can be of help to you in any way, I hope you'll let me know. Well, thanks very, very much. It's been a privilege.